Hi from across Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, in London. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Ciarán, in Berlin. Say hello, Ciarán.
I think that Boris Johnson looks like Muzzy, who's been dipped in bleach.
Yes, that's right. Muzzy. Everyone will get that cultural reference.
Muzzy.
This week, unfortunately, with a very heavy, heavy heart, we are going to return to Brexit and everything related to that. And the current, I would argue, constitutional crisis happening in the UK at the moment, or at least what everyone on every side of the aisle agrees is a constitutional crisis, but they all think it's been caused by someone else. This is instead of talking about the fun stuff that's happened, like the potential new Italy government and awful, awful things that Greece's government are trying to do. Yes. We have to talk about the thick molasses that the British press is having to wedge through, where they all have to explain what is proroguement, what is sovereignty, this person said this, etc.
The important thing is the UK has become obsessed with the new darling creature from the newest episode of Star Wars, the Porgs. Buy the toys, the Porgs. Everyone loves the Porgs. Remember when it screamed in the trailer? The Porgs.
I remember seeing a production note or something that someone gave an interview that one of the reasons the Porgs existed was that where they were filming, there's like a lot of puffins, so they had to cover up the puffins, and they were like, well, the only way to do that was with more like CGI animals on top of them, so I guess it's a thing now.
Yeah, no, they filmed that on like an island off the coast of Ireland, which is just puffin territory for sure.
Yeah. Puffin territory. That's a nice way to think about it. Not puffin territory is London, where I am, and there have been several street protests on numerous days outside of both Parliament and Downing Street regarding the planned future proroguement of Parliament. So to be clear, like, something I find quite confusing about the way this is covered is that they're going to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks, and the way the British Parliament works generally is that you have a legislative session, and then at the end of the legislative session, which often has been previously a year or so, then you close Parliament for a few weeks while you put together your new legislative agenda for the government, and then the Queen basically just reads out that statement at the opening of the next Parliament. It's not usually used to basically decide that you're worried that Parliament might do stuff you don't like, so you're going to close it for a few weeks while you wait for a deadline to happen. But that's where we are now. And we're just in... I guess I wanted to talk about this on two levels. As part of our recurring segment, Also Happening, where we discuss things that are also happening. I wanted to...
This is not a catch-all segment. Shut up.
The reason I wanted... It's usually for stuff that is, like, generally ongoing... I think this might be the first time we've done this. I kind of explain it on two levels. One, like, what is happening and how to think about that. But then also, like, why don't we talk about this more if it's ongoing news? And that this is, like, this has been argued as this is, like, a pivotal moment in it, and, like, a big change has happened. But you could argue that about Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister in the first place. And you could have argued that about the previous withdrawal agreement, like, votes. Each of them, you could have argued, were a pivotal moment in this whole thing. But in actual fact, it has caused nothing to happen. Because Boris Johnson has been in Parliament running the show for, like, one day. And is now just doing things during Parliament's recess for the summer. And most of that is making plans for how to, like... prevent anything he doesn't want happening in Parliament when it inevitably comes back, which it will for I think a week and a half before their agreed proroguement happens. Most Brexit news kind of fits the mold of this person has said this about Brexit and they are important for the following reasons. So it's like Michel Barnier will give a speech or give an interview, and then that will be a full day of commentary is Michel Barnier said this, and it's in conflict with people in the British government who've said this. And this has happened continuously for this entire multi-year process. So what is this, year three? This is like, since he got made chief Brexit negotiator, every couple of weeks you get Michel Barnier's comment on the latest Brexit developments. And it's always just, this is the EU's negotiating position. He gives the same negotiating position out again, and for some reason it's like pivotal news because whoever is in British government or is Brexit secretary or whatever at the time makes a contradictory statement that how they're going to convince the EU to change their mind. And it's just, we got sick of talking about it.
Yeah, it was, I think a huge part of this, and I think we've said it before in the podcast when we ended a former section on our podcast called Brexit Nonsense, was that our theory behind this, or at least mine, I can't remember Hugh stands on this, but I think you share this opinion as well, which is a lot of this happened because people basically in every publication, in every publishing house, every journal, every magazine, every goddamn newspaper in the UK, when Brexit happened, or possibly before with the campaign, assigned someone the Brexit brief. Being like, you have to have an article almost every day or every week or however regularly this publication comes out on Brexit, because this is going to be a big deal. And it is a big deal to a certain extent, but nothing that justifies that level of frequency. And a lot of these articles are kind of just hearsay or like contradictory messages, or a Tory backbencher said this, but he's been completely ostracized from the party and no one listens to him anymore, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this happens because a lot of these journalists are trying to basically justify their job. And I think
here's,
not to be mean about it, because I would do the exact same thing. Everyone's going to pay rent, like.
Yeah, but also it's bled into, basically, you can't talk about anything in British politics without someone piping in and being like, oh, but that won't be the case when Brexit happens, or this will affect Brexit negotiations. And you're like, you've just made it everything. It's a similar problem you have in the US with Trump, where like, everything, and that's somewhat different because, like, you know, he's the highest elected official. Like, I'm not arguing that everything shouldn't be brought back to Boris Johnson, who's currently prime minister, because, like, in effect, he's in charge. But bringing it back to, like, effectively bilateral negotiations and the inability of the government to get, like, the deal they negotiated ratified in Parliament, it's not necessarily related to everything. It has, like, a relation to everything, but making it every major piece of news is somebody says something about Brexit and you're just like, well, does that change anything? Is probably the first question you should ask about it. No, probably in most cases. Or it's usually someone commenting on someone else's lack of commentary on something is like 90% of this coverage. I can't read another article that says the Labour Party has no concrete position on Brexit. I'm like, well, you've been saying this for 3 years, and then they always come back with, here's our position. And you're like, I'm like, their position isn't, you know, helpful necessarily. It's there. Yeah, I'm like, sick of having this cyclical argument where they put forward a policy, someone says that policy isn't concrete enough, or it's not what we actually want, and then they go around and do that dance again. You're like, well, this isn't, like, realistically, none of you agree enough to settle on anything anyway, so why are you bickering over this? Why aren't you I guess moving on to a certain extent onto something else?
I mean, yeah, it has kind of bled into all British media, and it has mixed with the various concoctions of things that were there before as well, because like the whole Labour has the refusal of a lot of these publications to accept that Labour does have a position on Brexit is just kind of coupled with the usual we don't really like Jeremy Corbyn, or at least the people who run these papers don't. Then you also have, for today's episode of Corner Spatey, if you aren't listening to that podcast, go ahead and do that now. We did read a Spectator article about Matteo Salvini, and it was amazing how often that got looped back to Brexit.
Yeah. They find a way to wedge it in to things that have completely no relation. Like the amount of British press coverage around like von der Leyen getting made commission president. Very little of it was about, like, a lot of it had the narrative that is not untrue of it being like a weird shady backroom deal, but a lot of it then would, like, you would see headlines that were like, Brexit hardliner made commission president. You're like, has she? What? I'm actually kind of unclear on her position on that. Her position seems to be there's a negotiating team and they're doing their job. That's, I don't know what you're like the. Or we get brought back to, was this an opportunity for the government to renegotiate with some new people on Brexit? You're like, no, like, this has absolutely nothing to do with that, realistically. You've come up with the stupidest way to make it related to your national politics. You're not thinking about it in terms of, like, anything else, or how it relates to, kind of, the workings of the EU, because you're too focused on how it relates to this, like, blob or... the thick molasses you want to talk about. The word soup, your delicious word soup. I guess the other reason is that, like, the vast majority of the argument seems to be basically every political drama you ever watch, someone at some point says, oh no, the way to win arguments, or like the way to be clever at politics, is to not cede the framing of the question. And you just need to, like, reframe the question, and that's how you get what you want, or get people talking about it on your terms. But that doesn't work if everyone is doing that at the same time. So it's like everyone is just sitting around now, like this week, saying there's literally a Guardian article, which is I think they get like five quote unquote experts on the topic to debate whether or not this is a coup. And you have a Labour MP who says it is, and it's like, you know, a bit of like a very clever parliamentary, like, four-dimensional chess going on, which is almost certainly a coup. You're like, okay, sure. And then you have a Conservative MP who says, yeah, it is a coup, but it's not the coup you think it is. It's actually all the Remainers getting together and plotting to bring down the government. That's a coup. You're like, neither of those things are coups. That's not a coup. This is like this feels wrong because you're just having this really stupid argument about like the meaning of a word. Neither of you are correct.
Yes.
Unless you mean a coup in the sense of its other meaning, which is an unexpectedly successful achievement, which is the example. I love the Cambridge English Dictionary example for that version of a coup, which is, it was a tremendous coup for the local paper to get an exclusive interview with Prince Charles.
Interesting.
So I think that's the good way of viewing it. If anyone accusing someone of a coup now is just saying, good job, you're really clever. So that Conservative MP is just going, it was a really smart idea for all the opposition parties to get together and come up with a combined legislative platform to prevent the government doing what they want.
That sounds like some sort of weird Will Smithers-esque aide to Boris Johnson, basically just saying, no, when they say coup, they mean the original meaning. Yeah. They're not saying boo, they're saying booer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh no, they're not accusing you of some sort of violent coup or illegal and illegitimate seizing of governmental power. No, they're congratulating you, sir. Good job. it's just like, but you're both wrong, and like having this conversation is one, a massive waste of time, but it's also ignoring the grander point that you could be having, which is stepping back and saying this entire governmental system is and has been for a very long time not fit for purpose. Yes. And you can basically look at any other European country and have a very, very straightforward argument for why their government makes more sense as a system than your government.
Yeah, it's the so the other kind of like take on all this events that I was listening to, like I was exposed to another "is this a coup" debate or discussion. Let's call it a discussion. And they very quickly came to the conclusion no. But the reason they came to the conclusion it to being no is like, coup d'etat implies that what was there beforehand was a democracy, to which they're like, the UK is not really a democracy. And like, UK has, on like a democratic level, a huge set of problems. More so than other countries. And I'm not getting into the like abstract, very anarchist argument of like the futility of representative democracy. And that's not an exclusively anarchist argument, I should say. But anyway, that I'm more talking about like the functions of this. Like, you can talk about first past the post, which is a rubbish voting system. You can talk about having like the most unelected, I think it's like the UK has the most unelected legislators after China.
As in for the House of Lords, or
the House of Lords, because the way the House of Lords works, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there is technically a bunch of lords who just never like go into the House of Lords, but technically could at any point, and they're all just still running around.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who people forget are lords that reappear randomly.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, like,
yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber like flew back from the reopening of Cats to vote for some cuts to social welfare benefits Theresa May was trying to get put through. It was kind of like, the man barely even lives in this country. I don't understand why this system exists anymore, because there were so many like clear contradictions in it. There's like one of the theories of why it's still good is that it's filled with knowledgeable people who spend time. A lot of them are former politicians or cabinet members. It's like, well, but that's actually not, but that's clearly not the case, because you have huge numbers of people who were just put in for this purpose, and you still have some hereditary peers, and you still have some bishops, and or some Church of England people.
It's like, the Lords is filled with a bunch of technocrats, knowledge experts in the areas important to the running of the UK government, such as how to run a successful Broadway musical.
But that is, like, that is, I don't think that's necessarily an invalid argument, because you have that in... both the Irish upper house, which I know we don't necessarily aren't holding up as a good thing, and the Slovenian upper house, where you have representatives from like important fields. So you're like, you have a representative from the arts and someone who would actually be quite useful if they passed a bill on changing how arts funding worked, because you have someone who is surrounded by people who many of which would depend on how the current arts funding system works, so they might have like important insight on it. But that's not what the House of Lords is. What they like to pretend it is, but it's not.
No, but it is, like, I feel like the difference in the House of Lords and like what Slovenia and Ireland do is that, like, so there's this kind of thing of, like, if you ask Joe Public on the street who's a good like musical writer, they'll probably say Andrew Lloyd Webber. But then if you actually go into, like, the industry of musicals and that whole scene, there's probably some people who are on the ground who are way more involved, and, like, they'd be the people probably more deserving or with more knowledge. Yeah. And I feel like that's what Slovenia and Ireland gets to, because Slovenia and Ireland's memberships to these upper houses usually come from, like, union, like, trade unions or organizations that operate very similarly to trade unions. That's where these people kind of come from a lot of the time.
The way the House of Lords does it is a bad version of it. The idea of, oh, this person that happens to be like a famous musical writer. You could imagine an organization that, and someone like Andrew Lloyd Webber could be head of that, is like an amalgamation of that they've put him in charge because he's like a good figurehead and everyone recognizes him, and therefore he might have like clout negotiating stuff.
The other thing is that Cats is the joke amongst the musical community, like musical fan community, as being the bad musical.
Yeah, but I mean, now and forever, Cats.
Cats.
The so I guess the thinking of the stepping back is it's missing the opportunity to have a conversation that, like, frankly, like, too many people in the Labour Party don't want to have, which is how the electoral system that is currently quite beneficial for them is actively bad and is causing this problem. Because you have other countries where there's... So I guess I want to frame this in the... there's an article in everyone's favorite neoliberal publication, Foreign Policy magazine, which the title of it was Britain Can't Afford the Queen's Weakness Anymore. And effectively, like, this... It's kind of like the article's not really about that, but like,
why doesn't she French press more?
Yeah, reading that headline, you can assume it's from the weird group of people who want the Queen to step in and take action and like dissolve the government or something,
which was fairly prevalent.
Yeah,
in the run up to this,
or potentially the Queen will die and Prince Charles will come in and be really active politically. And you're like, And the kind of dichotomy that they put forward is what's happening in Italy now, where Mattarella was able to listen to Conte coming to him and saying, I think I'm going to be able to form a unity government with the PD and Five Star. You should give me the opportunity to do that instead of calling elections like Salvini wants. And Mattarella did that. But there's no reason why that wouldn't happen in the British system, because the Queen could just elect to pick the next person and be like, form a government. I don't want to have an election. That's not like a politically motivated thing that would get held up as... What would get held up is if she stops signing legislation. That would obviously be a, like, overtly political move. But that's not what's happening in Italy. That's like a very false equivalency. And government instability isn't something that the Queen doesn't fit, like, doesn't help fix. And it's, like, not necessarily a problem with how the Queen's office works or that it's not political. But you have this in other... So there's other countries that have, like, kings and queens as their quote-unquote head of state. And then they have... So, like, Denmark only has one house. They don't have an upper house. They just have the parliament. And their system works a lot better because they don't have first past the post, effectively. So they end up with a more fragmented parliament. So whoever is prime minister doesn't feel like they have this enormous majority behind them. They actually have a lot of people with different allegiances, and a lot of people not aligned to their party who will collapse their government if they do too much shit. It's not a question of, they might like start doing a vote of no confidence. You don't have the situation where everyone is in the Conservative Party, so they're not going to vote down a Conservative Party head of government.
Yeah.
So I think the problem is like multifold. You can't look at it and say, oh, if they had a like elected head of state or a political head of state, this would be different. It's like, well, that wouldn't fix it. I think you need that and something else, or House of Lords reform and a political head of state, or House of Lords reform and voting reform. Like, any one of them wouldn't fix the problem. The system is so stupid.
Yeah, the other one that was getting thrown around was the having a formalized constitution one, wasn't it? Rather than the I think there's some value in saying that we should probably, or not we, but you live there.
I vote here. It
doesn't I think there's a lot of value in saying that, like, the UK probably should do a constitutional convention, like a very radical one, in which everything is up for grabs about how the UK is run. Because I think the fact that everyone's throwing these arguments around shows that at the back of everyone's brain in the UK, they are aware that the system doesn't really work.
Yeah. But they don't want, like, so if you were high up in the Labour Party, you wouldn't want to admit that, because short term it would be an electoral disaster for you. Because if there was an election held today, like, Labour would have like a decent number of seats, like, if there was a proportional system, but then the Lib Dems would be like proportionally as powerful as they are popular, and it would in the short term be very bad for the Labour Party. And it would also let in a load of Brexit Party MPs. But part of the reason that they're able to become so popular is because of this system where people feel really disenfranchised and like their vote doesn't matter. So a lot of people do protest votes or join crazy movements that don't necessarily have a chance of doing particularly well. Because you could have an election tomorrow where, by the way things are dispersed, the Brexit Party ends up with like two votes, but like 12% of the vote. And you're like, well, that's not... Or 12 seats, or two seats, and 12% of the vote. You're like, well, that's not really okay. it's kind of like, I don't like them. I don't think they should be in parliament, but if people vote for them, they should get, you know, the number of seats for the people who vote for them. Otherwise, you're just going to have those people sit around again next election round and be like, well, no one listens to me anyway. Like, my vote doesn't matter. So I vote for the crazy people who say one thing I like. Regardless of how corrupt you can show me they are, because you're also corrupt because you're forwarding this bad system that basically everyone could probably get together and agree is it doesn't work and is long-term bad, but it's like about short-term gains. And you don't have like a lot of people in the Lib Dems like talking seriously about voting reform being their primary goal, because they've seen Brexit and being opposed to Brexit as their main talking point, the whole bollocks of Brexit thing, it's been incredible, like a massive boon for them. And I guess if you were higher in their party, you'd be concerned that if we change the subject, people might not think we're cool anymore because we're not talking about the thing they like. They might remember all those bad things we did. So I think it's bad.
It is bad.
Yeah, but then like I, that being said, this is like this is nuts. The way the current like stuff going on, mm-hmm. Like the whole mechanism by which Boris Johnson became prime minister is crazy because he never had to go through what forming a government in most countries would have to go through, where there would immediately be a vote of confidence and they would have to go do that. He's just been in power for what, months now. But he's only had to be in parliament one day where there was no vote on his legitimacy. It was just assumed that he was legitimate because he's formed the government. And then like there's been stuff like the weird stuff going on, like the Dominic Cummings or Benedict Cumberbatch, I like to remember him because he played him in that film once.
Oh yeah, Jesus Christ. Scrawling turkey everywhere.
Yeah, as the genius behind behind Brexit has just like a lot of people complaining now that it's a coup because Dominic Cummings is secretly running the show behind the scenes. You're like, well, again, you're presuming some sort of illegality, but you're not having a wider conversation about how the stupid system has created this monster. Like, there's already been one court challenge thrown out. The ones that are currently in process, most people I've seen talking about it in a like a serious legal sense, kind of agree that they're not going to go anywhere, because any judge will just look at this, like it will get to the UK Supreme Court, that is actually a relatively new institution, then look at it and be like, well, there's nothing that says that like that the Prime Minister has the ability to just go ask the Queen to prorogue Parliament, and she did, and that's not really like an illegal thing, and the Conservative Party is a private institution that gets to pick its own leader, and whoever their leader is happens to be Prime Minister currently, so that's the way things are. This is the you're not talking about reforming the system. You're talking about, no, they've broken the rules somehow. It might not have. They probably haven't. You're just... Anyway, the whole thing of, like, Dominic Cummings firing the advisors for other ministers and having them, like, escorted from Downing Street with, like, by the armed police that man it. You're like, but how is this happening? This is the... Like, this is ridiculous. And this is why we're talking about it now, because it's, like, boiled over to a certain extent. But... Yeah. In effect, nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed yet, but this is this has accelerated a couple of things. But before we go into the wider conversation about what we think could happen next or the effects of all this, I do want to mention another one of Dominic Cummings' plans that hasn't been enacted, because I just find it really funny, which is to delay Parliament, or what's been referred to internally in the Tory as the rebels, which is to say all the opposition parties that would oppose their like no deal Brexit, plus the people within their own party who would oppose a no deal Brexit. One of the plans that they came up with to stop any of their bills from passing is the creation of bank holidays, public holidays.
Yeah.
But the UK has the ability to create public holidays in very specific parts of the UK.
Wow.
I mean, the most you see this in actuality is that like, Scotland and Wales have different public holidays to like England as an example. But the thing about public holidays and how they affect the parliament is no matter where the public holiday is, no matter what percentage of land it's affecting in the UK, the entire parliament is out of session. So their plan was to create a series of bank holidays between now and the deadline on October 31st that would be in effect only in a part of like land in the UK where no one lives, to, you know, make sure the economy keeps going or whatever. But that would mean that the parliament wouldn't be in session for those days, which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. That sounds like that's somewhere between like a The Thick of It plot and an Always Sunny in Philadelphia plot.
The gang lead the EU. The other one I quite liked is you could call a general election for the 1st of October, so the day after no deal would happen, but then all the press reporting rules where you can't have press coverage, like electioneering press coverage for like a certain period around the election, would effectively be like no one can report without like breaking those rules about any bad fallout relating to no deal. So then and then they'll be talking to the election, and then some of the stuff like initial delays of goods and stuff at Dover and the other ports will have been like semi sorted out, or like be not as bad as they were the first day, and therefore you've dampened the story by calling an election. But you get to run the election as and it's all fine because no one can tell you otherwise. It's like, it's a lot of a lot of the stuff. If anyone's watched that, I actually recommend you do the Great Hack, the Carol Calwalder Cambridge Analytica documentary, and a lot of the crux of I don't like a lot of that documentary for reasons. I'm not gonna get into it. But the thing I really liked about it is you need to stop painting like the people like Dominic Cummings and the Cambridge Analytica people as like some sort of political geniuses. They haven't come up with something like clever or new. They're just doing stuff that other people aren't willing to do. So like going around saying things that you know to be untrue isn't necessarily like a brilliant political maneuver. It's someone probably thought of that and were like, but I wouldn't do that. That would be crazy. Or like, I'm going to close parliament to prevent it from having a no confidence vote in me just in case. It's like, well, yeah, that's not necessarily clever. That's just kind of something that it's not that no one's thought of that. They're just generally not willing to do it. And it's a lot of like intentionally spreading election disinformation is not like a new clever thing someone's come up with. It's a thing that most people don't do because they see it as like a bad look.
This ain't it, chief.
Yeah, that's what do you think is gonna happen?
Jesus, it's just gotten. It's become a bit of a fool's errand to try and protect the UK. It is interesting that like now both major parties are kind of gearing towards a general election. Just they have different conceptions about when that general election should be held.
Yeah, there's like re-selection votes happening for the Labour Party things. And there was one of the other things that I saw floating around that I think was not substantiated, but like was suggested and doesn't sound that far fetched, was people in the Johnson administration saying anyone who like votes with the like rainbow coalition of people trying to prevent No Deal and get more time in the Conservative Party will automatically be reselected as like a fiat from the top of the party. Like that's actually not impossible and not really that different to a lot of the stuff people are saying will happen. So who knows either way. Anyway, sorry, go on.
The kind of effect that I think this is possibly going to have, this might be an accelerationist opinion, but the only way out is through. This does seem to be a kind of a shock moment for a lot of British people,
mm-hmm.
that this thing can happen and is legal.
Yeah,
like I guess what we're talking about the beginning of this podcast is that a lot of people don't really realize that it is legal. Some people think it is illegal, and that I think will have a consequence, especially if he gets his way and if we have to go from now until October 14th with no one in parliament. Because the other strategy is, or the other interesting thing you can do around this is you now have a bunch of MPs who have suddenly a lot of free time to give interviews and like do rallies and talk to people about this. I don't know. I really don't know how that's like one way it could play out, but it could also become like a mini Brexit situation where it's so talked about that people become numb to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God damn.
Yeah. This is the thing. It's like an enormous proportion of people are already numb to it, and this is the problem of this. Like it's the perpetual state of this is the most important thing to happen with it. I think it's very analogous to the like feeling I certainly have about things like Trump, because it's not going anywhere. And yes, each thing that happens is like a whole new level of horrifying, but at some point you're just like, there's not, like, no one's doing anything about it, and like they're seemingly actually unable to, so they kind of have to just wait until there's an election. And in the UK, effectively, it's like, I guess we have to wait till Parliament's in session, and then nobody agrees on actually forcing an election, so I guess nothing's going to happen about it. Because there's the obvious, like, in this case, there's the obvious thing that you could do, which is form a unity, like, other government, and force that through. But it seems like no one will agree on how that would work, so they're not going to do it.
Hmm.
So you're just kind of stuck with whatever the status quo is, which is just more and more extreme people getting put into high levels of power in government. It's just good fun. I guess go to protests. Everyone loves a good protest.
Yeah, and get ready for a general election, I guess, because it's either going to happen before or after October 31st.
But not on October 31st.
No, we're busy. It's Halloween. How dare you?
Yeah. Though, again, like, people... that was another thing I discovered was the... So elections here are usually on a Thursday. I think it was a Thursday or Tuesday. I think it's Thursday.
Thursday in the UK.
And
Friday in Ireland.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, but you could just call it on Friday. Because actually, there's no rule that you have to do that. It's just... That's just the way things have been.
Oh, the UK.
Yeah, indeed.
It just sums it up, doesn't it? There's no rule. It's just, that's kind of how we've been doing it.
Yeah. It'll be fine. I'm not worried about it. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah.
What should I stock up on? I've been told olive oil is important.
Olive oil and Prosecco. Together at last. In a big jug.
Well, oh, no. I quit this country.
Your post-Brexit rations of olive oil and Prosecco.
Yeah. No, but like the... This is the thing.
Easy squeeze container.
Yeah. Like, to a certain extent, as much as I hate it, I really think that people should have taken their opportunity to vote through some version of the withdrawal agreement. If, at the time, the conversation was just, no, we're fine with the referendum result, we just need we just don't want Theresa May to have negotiated it. It's like, the fuck does that mean? What's your plan? There's no, it's the bigger picture is more important. The stupidity of the British electoral system is, and like the entire structure of government needs to be redone. It has nothing to do with Brexit. It's what people should be talking about. Is it the stupid country? Anyway, I quit. I'm out.
So join us for our next week's episode, where Hugh will suspiciously also be in Germany.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I could do it for a holiday.
And that's been another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is produced and recorded by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the podcast, make sure to support us. You can support us in a myriad of ways. The first is the non-money ways you can support us, like leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, which helps us, or telling your friends about it, or anyone you might know who might be like into this podcast. Also shouting us out on social media, that's kind of cool. We're on all major social medias, like Facebook, we have a Facebook group, Twitter, we have an account, at PREV in Europe, and we have a website, previouslyineurope.eu, where you can find all that information, including our email address, previouslyineurope@gmail.com, which you can, you know, talk to us on. The other way that you can support us, of course, is our Patreon account, patreon.com/previouslyineurope. There you can donate a certain amount to keep the podcast lights running, and with that you'll get some benefits, like a bonus episode, which this time will be National Airlines of Europe. That is going to be our next bonus episode. It's been a long time coming. We're finally going to talk about it. The issue on everyone's lips. What's up with Aer Lingus? Anyway, you'll also, one of the benefits you get is if you donate over a certain amount, you will be shouted out on the podcast. Like these cool cats, Dermot Burke, Dreers Arian, Justin Paul Sammons, Lisa Shalagina, Michael Hall, Newt, Niall McLaughlin, and Subliminal Kid. And also, just for fun, for this time only, I'm going to shout out the other people who donate to us, like Chris Bennington, Littus. That's it. Just wanted to shout out those guys because their support is also appreciated. Anyway, thanks for listening. See you next week.